Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host,
Chad Mitch.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. We have officially eclipsed the one-year episode mark. We are now into the early 50s with our episode 53 tonight. So we are officially past the 52 traditional episodes that would comprise a year. Light week as far as our movie news goes. It's really just a bunch of stuff that's unique and different and just eclectic. But let's start off with some news that doesn't really surprise either one of us. The fact that Favreau will come back to play Happy Hogan in Spider-Man Homecoming, which will mark his first non-Iron Man movie appearance. Although, I could have sworn he was in the first Avengers, but I think it was just Pepper.
It was just Pepper.
Yeah. So, your thoughts on Happy Hogan showing back up in Homecoming?
I'm surprised, but not surprised. I mean, he's in the movies, and it makes sense that he's there. It's just, I never thought he would appear in another non-Iron Man movie.
But you never thought Iron Man would appear in another non-Iron Man, non-Avengers movie.
Well, once Robert Downey Jr. like re-upped, I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to plaster him everywhere. So, him not so much. It's just like, Happy is, like, he's one of those characters. He's been in all the movies. Everybody knows who he is. But, I mean, nobody really thinks of him in terms of jumping over the movies. What it really says to me is that Disney really likes Favreau, and they're like, you made Iron Man 2, but we forgive you, because you also made Jungle Book, and that made us a lot of money. So we're going to stick you here.
And we continue to give you an executive producer credit on all Avengers movies.
Yes. So it just shows Disney. I thought people might have thought that Favreau and Marvel had a rocky relationship after 2, but
the fact that he came back for Shane Black's Iron Man 3, I thought pretty much quelled any of those concerns.
Yeah, and so I think he's solid with Marvel, and now Disney's like, you're really our guy, and along with maybe them trying to woo him to do another Marvel movie, there's also the thoughts of him doing a Star Wars movie, so Disney's pretty much trying to wrap him in the House of Mouse. So that's more what I got out of this than actually.
Well, there's going to be the TV thing. I mean, I think they're going to have him direct a couple of episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
I mean, it's to me, what's interesting to me about this news is the fact that the last time we saw Happy Hogan, he was lying in a hospital bed watching Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And that was in Iron Man 3, which was, 2013?
Yes.
May of 13?
Yeah.
And even before the incident at the Chinese theater, at Mann's, it was a different portrayal of Happy than we had seen in 1 and 2. It was more of a pestering, busy, nosy kind of a portrayal of the character, which was a little bit different than what we had in the first 2 Iron Man movies, which was basically just him and Downey bouncing off of one another. And then he proceeded to lie in the hospital bed for 3/4 of Iron Man 3. So I'm interested to see how he plays into this. Is it a situation where, Stark sends Happy to go look after Peter while he's in training? Is it just that Happy comes with Stark when he comes to Queens to do whatever he ends up doing? Does Happy just stand guard outside the door while Stark and Aunt May are having fun? I mean, that's the interesting part for me, is how does he play into the movie? Because he's tied to Stark in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Just how does he fit into this, and where has the character moved since getting out of that hospital bed and going through the events of Civil War and going through the events of Age of Ultron and now, this Spider-Man movie?
Hopefully, I don't think it's more than a cameo, so I would imagine he just shows up with Robert Downey Jr. for one scene. Hopefully this means Robert Downey Jr. has two scenes in the movie. One is Tony Stark, one is Iron Man, and they're both quick and out the way. Because I just want... I know you have to do it for Sony's benefit of giving them Iron Man and blah, blah, blah. But it's a Spider-Man movie. I just want Spider-Man. Even though I think Peter and those two could be fun in a scene together.
Yes. And the first lines in his cameo should be, "Where's Pepper?"
Gotta let that one go.
No, no. First question for question time with Mr. Feige. Where is Pepper Potts? Is she being held hostage with Jane Foster somewhere now?
No. More, Jane's more like executed.
Jane Foster, Pepper Potts, and Betty Ross walk into a bar together.
What bar?
The bar of Marvel women where Agent Carter bartends.
No, Agent Carter's above that. They actually gave her a death. We know that. We know where she's at. This bar is like somewhere like cut off, ducked behind something where they're the only three people there because nobody knows they exist anymore.
Well, throw Kate Downing's and Kat Downing's in there too. So.
Oh, she can go.
So, I mean, that's what I'm interested in is where they go from here and where the character, because that's the thing, even in Iron Man 3, he references the events of the Avengers. Rhodes does the same thing in Iron Man 3, talks about Tony's, you know, aliens in New York,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. So living in a world where these movies take place and having characters who inhabit that world, how have these events continue to affect, yeah, Happy? And where do we find him now as opposed to 3 years ago? 4 years ago.
Maybe 4 years, yeah, when he comes out, yeah.
4 years and 2 months?
Man, didn't seem that long.
No, but it's the most controversial film in Marvel history.
Yeah.
Because everybody collectively takes a dump on Iron Man 2. Like, they just acknowledge, everybody just punts on Iron Man 2.
They
like,
do.
Iron Man 3 is the most divisive.
I guess. I get it, but I don't hate it as much as the people that do hate it. And so.
Well, Alden Killeridge as the real Mandarin instead of Ben Kingsley, who is talking and doing propaganda videos as Trevor Slattery.
The Killian reveal was like, okay, I'll follow you. I don't really think I should follow you, but I'll go this way. I like Ben Kingsley as the crazy Mandarin. It was a fun reveal. Now, after the reveal, it's pretty much like, well, why do I give me this stuff in the other two movies for this? But, you know, herein lies the problem with Iron Man 3.
Well, part of the problem is the inherent... They weren't in a place to do him yet. Because it is an inherently Thanos-ish type of out there kind of a character. The ironic part to me is that I thought if there was a modern way to do the Mandarin, it was the way that they were presenting him in those trailers, which is a dictator warlord who, for as bad as the bald guy was in the original Iron Man and not the
guy that kidnapped Tony, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
The guy who had the rings,
yeah,
tattoo, I think, or something. That kind of hint.
Yeah, one of the rings.
Yeah. Like, the idea of that guy being... Someone being higher than him and being even more, you know, brutal and, you know, in the real world where we know of dictators who use propaganda and to spread their message and who are effective messengers and inspire others to their cause. I thought that would be an interesting take in the 21st century to take on the Mandarin. You didn't have to necessarily do magic rings that spit out lasers, but I thought that was a better way to go about it. And then it's like, to take Iron Man's Joker and turn him into a joke.
I agree that the setup with the videos was the way to go. I actually liked all of that. That's why I was really excited for it. But the irony for me is the Mandarin is a stretch of a character, and how he's portrayed and everything.
So is Thanos.
So is Thanos, but this movie came right after Avengers, and Avengers, no matter what you say about it, that is the point where Marvel proved, like, this is what we do, and this we do it well, and this is when everybody bought in on Marvel, and it's, if you're going to do the Mandarin, you do it after, you can do it after Avengers, because everybody has bought in, and Iron Man is your biggest star, and then you can do it and take your shot. I mean, it couldn't have been any worse than what ended up happening.
Well, the issue there is the placement of Iron Man 3. Basically, the way that Marvel looked at things was, and again, this is more stuff we can ask Kevin Feige when we get our question time, but it seems to me that the way that Marvel looked at it was, look, we just spent 4 years in, 3 years in four movies getting to the Avengers, or four movies in 5 years getting to the Avengers. We made Avengers as the third highest grossing movie of all time that buys us a whole ton of box office capital and capital with fans and goodwill that you build up. So we can either take all that goodwill and take all those chips and move them to the center of the table on a iteration of Mandarin right off the bat, or we can take all of those chips and move them over here to this thing that's called Guardians of the Galaxy and take our chances on this female writer's really interesting take that we've given to James Gunn and bet on that so that we can set up our space cosmos wing of our universe and start preparing to go down the even crazier paths of Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel and Black Panther and everything else. So it seemed to me like they just weren't ready to take their capital and spend it on Mandarin.
See, because when they made Iron Man 3, it was like right after or during
they were on the press tour for Avengers, and then he went to North Carolina to start filming Iron Man 3.
So when they were developing Iron Man 3, Avengers was still in development, so they didn't know what they had, and I mean, quite frankly, when...
And they'd made the director change.
They did, yeah. So they didn't know they were getting this capital. They were just kind of... I know a lot of people were probably just like, I hope this works. I think if they knew that, then it'd be like, well, we can... Let's split the bet. We have Iron Man. Everybody loves Iron Man. Even after Iron Man 2, everybody loves Iron Man. We can put capital here, and we can bet some on Guardians too. So if production on Iron Man was like a little bit later, I wonder if that would have changed anything.
Well, I think the interesting part to me was when they decided not to have Favreau come back for Iron Man 3, and they basically, my understanding, again, this is question time with Mr. Feige. From my understanding of it, is they basically went to Downey and was like. You have a list of guys that you'd like to work with? Because we'll go talk to those guys. And he was like, I made this movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with this guy named Shane Black. And he does really irreverent, like, different movies that, like, fly in the face of conventional wisdom. And we'll do, like, a Christmas movie that comes out in the middle of May. You know? I think he'd be really good for this. And so they went to talk to Shane Black, and Shane Black was like, okay, fine, give me the money, I'll do it.
I think Downey really was... I think I've heard them say that part of the reason they went after him was because they saw Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. So I think he has some of, you know, to pay it forward kind of thing. With, you know, Shane, you're responsible for me getting this, so come on over here, get some of this Marvel money too. So, I mean,
and I guess we all kind of should have understood that we were going to get it, but I think that was the interesting part, was Shane Black, that is a Shane Black movie through and through.
Yes, it is. It very much is.
And it feels almost, and I've heard people throw out theories that because it feels so separate and so apart, that even though Feige is on record as saying that the whole thing is continuous, for example... The events of Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America the First Avenger all happened within the same week.
Yeah.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So Feige is very, very literal about the timeline. You know, Captain Civil War takes place a year after Age of Ultron. But that film feels so different that I could totally buy the fan theory that, like, that movie comes after Captain America: The Winter Soldier, because there's literally no mention of S.H.I.E.L.D. anywhere in the movie.
That's true.
Fury never shows up, and, like, an Avenger just had his house blown up, and the President of the United States is a target. At that point, I'm pretty sure S.H.I.E.L.D. would have gotten involved.
That is not a bad theory. It makes me want to go back and watch Iron Man 3.
Because it does feel so much separate from the MCU.
Yeah. But that was the point they were going for with it. They were like, they heard everybody talk about Iron Man 2 and how it felt like just a setup movie. So they're like, they kept saying, they were going to bring Tony back to the cave. We're going to bring Tony back to the cave. And that was their way of saying they're going to separate him off and take away, strip him down to build him back up. And
with a strange PTSD subplot.
Yeah. Because they.
And exploding humans.
That was the extremists in that is weird, especially because I've read the original extremists and it's like kinda, but not really. And Tony does nothing with it in this, and in the comics it's a big thing for him. But the PTSD thing is that all just feels like, while very real, it also feels like their way. They never want to touch the demon in the bottle stuff. But it's their way of doing stuff, kind of like that.
I felt like they did Demon in the Bottle in Iron Man 2 in the house party.
I
felt that was Demon. That was him doing Demon in a Bottle, as close as Disney or Marvel was ever going to allow him to do.
Yeah.
That fight between Rhodes
and I would agree with that, but that all just goes back to, I mean, it's nowhere near what that story is.
No, but Harley and Joker isn't anywhere near the domestic abuse relationship that should have been depicted.
Sure, and it goes back to the studios, like, these are superheroes, kids like these things, not so much. Even though in the case of Suicide Squad, you have some arguments for kids not being able to see that movie. But, did Disney own Marvel at that point?
That was right after they bought them.
Okay. But,
I always thought of that scene in Iron Man 2 as Feige's way of paying homage to Demon in the Bottle and kind of being referential to Demon in the Bottle without having to do the whole thing. Because it kind of felt like the blood poisoning from the arc reactor was kind of being a substitute
for alcohol. Yeah, I agree, because I've heard them. I've actually, when they were working on this, they kept saying, we're kind of going to do Demon in the Bottle. So when I saw it, I'm like, okay, I get it. But people that really like Demon in the Bottle, they're like, that just adds on to the facts of why what they don't like about Iron Man 2.
So another question time for Mr. Feige. Why did you have to fire Terrence Howard on the publicity trail for the original Iron
Man? I can answer this one for him. Let's see. I just made this movie that I didn't know was going to make a lot of money, and it made a whole lot of money. And everybody likes the star that was getting paid less than the co-star. So we asked the co-star to take a pay cut. He said, get bent, and we said, hit the road.
And we won Don Cheadle anyway.
Yeah. And almost everybody wins, except for you, Terrence Howard.
Well, he ended up on Empire, so.
He did, but he really, the whole reason he took that job is because he knew who War Machine was, and he knew he'd have to get an armor, which is the whole thing for that scene, and he got none of that. And now Don Cheadle has worn armor. But then again,
Don Cheadle's in an Avengers lineup.
He is, but Don Cheadle can't use his legs, so.
Yet Pepper Potts doesn't come to visit.
Oh, wait, spoiler. Don Cheadle can't use his legs after Civil War. Spoiler. Sorry.
Thank you, Vision. So let's move on back to the rundown now that we've done a thorough dissection of Iron Man 3 and Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
So Warner Brothers wants to talk to Daniel Radcliffe about doing a Cursed Child trilogy. Have you read the stage play?
I have not.
It is a story about a father grappling with adulthood. A father grappling with fatherhood. It's a very intense play. It does not have enough material to sustain three movies.
I didn't think it did.
And my personal thoughts on this are as follows. Somebody at Warner's said, hey, we just turned a bestiary into a trilogy with Rowling as the screenplay writer. This thing just sold a whole bunch of copies. Maybe we should get the film rights to it, just in case. And somebody else was like, yeah, and maybe we should have two more options after the first one. And somebody else was probably like, yeah, and we should probably go talk to Daniel Radcliffe about doing old age makeup again, because it worked so well the first time. And that probably got overheard somewhere in a water cooler and got passed down to the Hollywood Reporter.
So, well, I do know that they didn't have to go acquire the rights. They just have all the Harry Potter rights. So whatever she writes, since she pops out Harry Potter on it, WB already has it in their life. Cha-ching. Now, the seeing them saying they want to make three movies, I'm like, Warner Brothers, like, you're killing me. Like, did you not? You are the studio that made The Hobbit, the smallest book of the ones that have to do with Middle Earth, into three movies.
When all the appendices could have been their own movies.
Yeah. You started, like, when you announced that movie, you said it was going to be two. And even then, I still haven't read The Hobbit, because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of slow and puts me to sleep a little bit. But the book is like maybe not even 200 pages. So when you say you're going to make two movies, I'm like, why? I mean, wait, I know why.
Yeah, money. The first one was supposed to be there and back, was the An Unexpected Journey, and the other one was supposed to be there and back again.
Yeah.
And of course, we all know the stories now, having seen Peter Jackson actually give the interview where he is like, I was almost dead. I literally had to tell Andy Serkis to stop directing Second Unit so that we could all take a break and figure out how we were going to do this, because my mind was in pieces and so was the script.
Yeah. Like, hearing the stories about that movie, it is amazing that they made all three of them. They made one, let alone all three, because he wasn't supposed to direct it. Guillermo was supposed to direct it. Guillermo left.
Well, MGM went bankrupt.
So, you're not supposed to be able to pull a movie together in those circumstances. And they made three of them. Now, think of them what you will, but they made those three movies. So, I will forever applaud Peter Jackson for that, like, Herculean feat. But part of that is because Warner Brothers wanted to make three instead. Well, they wanted two, and then in the middle of shooting them, we're like, let's make them three. Again, don't do that. Just stick to the plan. Stick to the script. And they could have done two. I think they would have came out better, and everything would have been fine. So, back to Harry Potter. This, I know it's a play, and I know you can get a movie out of it. But three, especially when Rowling is like saying, this is it. I'm done with Harry Potter. I would do stuff in the world, but Harry Potter, done. It just seems like Warner Brothers is just like, I just want more money and let's milk this sucker dry, when they don't have to. Like, Fantastic Beasts is going to make a ton of money. Harry Potter won't be in it.
But therein lies your question. How much money is it going to make? Because the words Harry Potter aren't on it. But Hogwarts is name dropped. The music cues are the same. Dumbledore is name dropped. There are bits and pieces that put you in the wizarding world of America. And she's putting a whole lot of supplemental material out through Pottermore and through her Twitter account.
Well, my gauge on this is my daughter's mom, because she knows none of this stuff. Like, she knows who Harry Potter is, and that's about it. She never read the books, never really seen the movies. I think we took her, my daughter, to see one movie, and her mom, the Fantastic Beasts trailer came on. I don't think it said Harry Potter at all in this trailer or anything. And she looks over at me and she's like, she says Harry Potter, and she's like, I want to see it. And she's never seen any of these movies. So if she can pick up that it's Harry Potter, like, without anything else, I think most of the general audience can. She is by definition what a general audience member is. She goes by trailers, and that's it. So I think they're fine with Fantastic Beasts. I don't think it's going to make Harry Potter's numbers this first one, but if it's good, it could potentially get to that point.
You do 750 to 800 million worldwide, you're happy.
Yes. But, I mean, making a Cursed Child movie is like a no-brainer. And if you make the movie...
with Radcliffe.
You're going to make it with Radcliffe. Again, a no-brainer.
But that's at least 10 years down the road for when he would be,
age-appropriate. Yeah, because Harry Potter's always weird to me because in the books, we're the same age. So when you told me, when you say that it's like a guy dealing with fatherhood, I'm like, yes, this is me. Look, Harry, me and you are like right in line. But then I'm like, wait, Radcliffe's like 22. Now he's older than that, but I don't think you have to age him up
too much. Well, I think Jim Vegeta at IGN had a really good point, which was maybe you don't have to necessarily do the movie, but maybe you can take this play stateside. Take it from West End and take it to Broadway and let Radcliffe do it as a limited run Broadway edition, and you know that show sells out like
every
showing.
Yes, and he's done plays, so
he's done Equus and he's done a few other Broadway plays.
So. Yeah, I think that's a good idea, except that Warner Brothers is not getting any of that. So I mean, if they're willing to work out a deal and let them do this play and let it sell out, and that ties you over. They're not going to wait 10 years.
Or you could turn around and put it on a DVD.
You could, but it's still...
Or go the Hamilton route and do it on PBS.
You definitely would put it on, like, Blu-ray and DVD, but it still doesn't get WB their opening gigantic blockbuster money.
Which I don't think they're necessarily going to need if Fantastic Beasts can sustain itself.
If so, maybe if if Fantastic Beasts like turns out to be a juggernaut, maybe they'll be like, we can wait off on Harry Potter.
Well, because like you said, the timeline is sketchy because the kid is.
You see how old he is.
Because the kid is born, I think, in like 85, and the books end. The main body of Deathly Hallows ends in like 1997.
Because 7 years.
Well, it's like Lily and James die, and like 83 or 84.
No, it's less than that. It's like 82. Because he was born, I know he was born in 81.
If he was born in 81, and he has to be 18 years old at the events of Deathly Hallows.
It's 99.
Yeah, so it's right about the time when Sorcerer's Stone came out.
Yeah.
So then 17 years after 1999
would be
2016.
Next year, 2017. More or less, yeah.
More or less, and that's where the appendices takes over. The epilogue occurs, and then the Cursed Child book takes place, I think, after. After the epilogue. So you're talking somewhere around 2020.
Oh, well, it's not that far off, so...
No, but again, you're talking about the 10-year age gap between where Radcliffe actually is and where...
Let me see how old he is. Okay.
So... But, I mean, it's just another revenue stream for WB. And, you know, if they can get people to turn out, it will be a tremendous test of the Harry Potter brand. To see,
he's born in 89.
So he's 2 years younger than me. I'm 29, so he's 27.
Okay, so he would theoretically shooting to be my age. So we need him like another 8 years.
Right.
But
Which you're hoping to get at least 3 more films out of Fantastic Beasts, and the sequel already has a release date for, I think, 2019 or 2020. So.
Okay, so if that's the case, I wouldn't put this movie between those two. So I wouldn't put this movie.
I think you do the Fantastic Beasts trilogy and then come back to Cursed Child.
Yeah. That would be smart, because in that way it gives her.
And that way it gives Radcliffe time to go do whatever. Wants and not. I mean, that's one of the reasons he's chosen some of the roles that he's chosen over the years is to kind of distance himself from.
Yeah. It also gives them time to change Rowling's mind. Like, maybe one more Harry Potter story, please?
We get Harry Potter stories. We just get them on Pottermore.
Maybe one more Harry Potter book-ish kind of thing, please?
The encyclopedia is the only other thing we're getting, I think.
I'm pretty sure. But, you know, I know she's not hurting for anything, but when you back up Brink's trucks to people's houses and be like, just dump them out. Like, we got like 10 more of those. And we can get more.
So, Frank Oz, getting up there in age. How many more times can he play Yoda?
Well, hell. How many more times can John Williams get up there and can make a score?
How many times can James Earl Jones voice Vader?
All of these are very relevant questions. And the answer seems to be until they just roll over, because they're all coming back.
Is Frank Oz coming back?
I'd have to imagine. I don't know how old he is. I'd have to imagine he's younger than James Earl Jones and way younger than John Williams. So, and John Williams, he just had his concert at the Hollywood thing last night, just going around kicking in his white jacket, looking like fly old John Williams. So, hopefully, it's always good to have Gonzo the Great back. He was Gonzo. And he was Miss Piggy. For those that don't know, Frank Oz was Miss Piggy and Gonzo.
And Fozzie.
And Fozzie. So, yeah, most of your favorite Muppets, Frank Oz.
Or Jim Henson.
Or Jim Henson. And that's probably all the puppeteers you know.
I mean, let's face it, he stopped being a puppet after episode one, so...
Yeah, he's a little CG thing. Nah.
He had to be in order to wield a lightsaber.
Yeah, which I'm still not entirely a fan of, but
really, because I'm a big fan of that fight with Dooku, even though it lasts like 2.5 minutes.
Okay, like I get it from like a visual standpoint. You know, Yoda's always walking around with his little cane, and all of a sudden he just flips the switch and literally flips out. And it's like just bouncing around the room. I get that, but it's still like, I'm used to the decrepit old dude and not this flying green pinball.
Well, therein lies your next great standalone film. Because there was a female Yoda in the expanded universe, and we could...
No.
Look, what happened to Yoda on Dagobah?
I don't care.
How did he become... the crazy half-wit that meets Luke Skywalker.
Because he's the only person on Dagobah, and he lost his mind. That's what happens. The end. I don't need anything else. He can show up as a Force ghost in these new movies, and that's it. I don't need anything else. Stop it.
See, I think he would be an absolutely necessary part, as well as Bail Organa. Both would be necessary parts of a Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film.
He can show up there. But again, my main issue is I just want him to show up with the cane and not and just hobbling. I don't need to see Super Yoda ever yet.
See, I love Super Yoda because it's so awesome to think of an 800-year-old being who still has enough energy to just, like, literally flip the switch and decide, I'm going to go take on the Emperor and destroy the entire Senate chamber.
I mean, I get it. I just don't like it. Like, he can... I don't know. Like... I just don't like it. I just don't like it.
All right. So for those wondering, we have heard rumblings that Frank Oz was on set and the potential that Yoda could have been in episode 8. So.
Yeah. We're thinking Force Ghosts. It's the only thing that kind of really makes sense.
Which means that if Luke is communicating with Force Ghosts.
because George Lucas can't help himself, if there were to be other Force Ghosts. We know there are three. One would be Obi-Wan, who would have to be played by Ewan McGregor, which is fine, because Ewan, at this point, Ewan has almost like upward the road from
Sir Alec Guinness.
Yeah. And, you know, one's alive and one's not. And then, but the big one is, Anakin is a Force ghost. Now, if you've seen Return of the Jedi since they've been released on, like, Blu-ray and stuff. The special, well, not the even
second,
the special edition.
The second generation special edition.
Yes. Ever since, what's that god awful third movie? Oh, Revenge of the Sith. Ever since then you know that the Force Ghost we get from now on is of young Anakin, which would be Hayden Christensen. Again, I say, this makes no goddamn sense. Because Darth Vader, Anakin came back. He came back to the light side. He was Anakin. We got to see what Anakin looked like as an old man, and he died as Anakin. So we should see old dude Anakin.
As we did for many years.
Many, many years. And now, because George, I don't know what the hell he was doing on this particular day, was like, well, I'm going to put Hayden in there. I guess, I really think he was like, y'all really don't like my movies. Y'all don't like my prequels. You don't like what I've done with the special editions. Well, goddammit. I'm going to do this.
It's like Jar Jar waving to the camera in episode 2.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm doing this because I know y'all don't like it and I don't appreciate y'all liking it. So I'm going to do this and I'm burning the originals and you're stuck with this. This is what you get for the rest of your life. So, George Lucas, you've done lots of great things. But this terrible. It's awful. Awful.
I am still convinced that somewhere Lucas has the original prints and would have had to turn them over to Disney. Because Disney has to know that a DVD, Blu-ray copy of the original edits put out on home video would sell more than any other Star Wars set ever.
They do. They do know it. I think they would gladly take them.
He's on record as saying he destroyed the original negatives in order to create the special editions.
Yes, and so I'm of a couple minds on this. One, I almost want to take him at his word because, again, listen to him talk, while everybody loves the originals, and he loves them too. It's just like, he just looks at them, he sees all these things he couldn't do. And then when he got the chance to do them, he's like, well, this is how I really wanted it. So I don't need these anymore. Nobody ever needs to see these anymore. This is my vision of it. So he just torched them suckers. I can completely buy it. But also, hearing how people talk about it, it seems like he kind of is an emotional guy. And while this is his original vision, somewhere in him be like, but these are like what I really, this is what I made, and there is a special place in my heart. But I don't want anybody to ever see these again. But I just can't get rid of them. So somewhere, he's got a dungeon that's got a trap door, that's got like a vault, that's got like a mini box with like a genetic code imprinter. And in there lies those things. And he's got them locked away so deep, nobody's ever going to find them until he dies. And even then, it's going to be like Indiana Jones and some cryptic messages to figure out what it is. You have to run from a boulder and jump across a pit and getting all this stuff to even get it. So I would not put that past him either. Now, the question is, if option number 2 is on the table, does Disney know about it? He could have been like, look, I got him. Again, Raiders of the Lost Ark for him. But I got him. But you can't have him. You want all of this? That's my terms. We've discussed all these terms, but this is my one term. I have him. You know I have him. So legally, just because legally you know. But you ain't getting him. So we're going to sign these papers or what?
See, I think that the way that conversation went was, I have the original negatives. They are stored away somewhere where I know that they are located. And I will turn them over to you on the condition that you do not release them on DVD or home video or any kind of format until I'm gone.
No.
So you can continue to, because the problem for me with the whole idea of destroying the negative to create the special editions was the National Film Preservation Society and the National Board of Film Review would have prevented him from destroying that negative, because it would have been categorized as a piece of his film history.
Yeah.
So it would have been protected, almost like a historical landmark, so to speak.
Yeah.
So That's one of my big issues with the idea that he completely destroyed the negative making the special editions. Could he have cleaned the negative up? Yes, I completely believe that he cleaned the negative up. But I don't believe that the digital alterations that he did to put Jabba into the movie affected the
film.
The celluloid.
Are all three registered with the thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, I can get with that.
As are all three Godfather films.
So, alright, since I didn't know that, so I'm going to stand by option A, which is we're Raiders of the Lost Ark in this. Dizzy Knows was like, look, I don't know who you're going to get it, but it's there. You can't get it till I'm dead, but it's there.
Yeah. Which, I mean, again, everybody knows what kind of money that's going to make.
Lots. I will dump the set I just bought, like, now, and go get those. Mm-hmm.
See, funny story. I had the Blu-ray Complete Saga in my hands the day before the announcement of the purchase of Lucasfilm. And I was going to wait till the next day, because I got paid the next day to go back and get it. Because I had not owned any of the movies on DVD. I only had the VHS special edition set.
Yeah.
So I'm getting ready to go to to Best Buy to pick up my set, and I look at my phone and I see Disney has purchased Lucasfilm. Promises to make episodes 7, 8, and 9, and I'm like, shh. So. Yeah, I still don't own any Star Wars movies. I own the prequels on DVD, or technically now you own the prequels.
Well, I mean, I'm DVD. Borrowing them. I might watch one of them tonight. But as we say that, if I could do it, I would take the original Star Wars. I would keep the special edition Empire Strikes Back, because none of those changes offend me. Yeah. I actually like all of them. And to hell with special editions Return of Jedi. Just dumb with it. Even though I'm mildly amused by the new Cantina song.
Hey, be grateful. That's the last iteration of Slave Leia you will ever see.
As it should be.
So let's move on to some other news. Disney related. Beauty and the Beast has started sending out set pics. We've heard bits and pieces of the table read. Your feelings on this latest animation to live action iteration?
So, I'm almost 35. And I'm entirely too excited to see this movie for a 35-year-old man. I'm just like, I saw those pictures, particularly the picture of Gaston, and in my head, I'm just singing the song, and I'm like, I can't wait to see Luke Evans and, what's his name? Who is LeFou, sing this song. I'm just so ready for it. This is partially influenced by the fact that I have to sing this song like every other day for my daughter or when we're driving around. So I have an attachment to Gaston. But I just want to see more from this. I'm just ready to see more. They showed me Gaston, LeFou. They showed me the clock and the candle. Got a little bit of the table read. Nah, I just want to see it. Just stop playing with me, Disney, and give me what I want to see. So, I don't know how it's affecting everybody else, but it has me, the two grown men, to like this kind of stuff. Like, I want to be the first one in line to watch this, and I might dress my daughter up as an excuse just to do it. So, you got me, Disney, and all my damn money. I hate you.
See, that's the same way I am with Scar, and be prepared.
That's another one I have to sing. She makes me the bad guy. I have to sing all the bad guy songs. But I like them all. So, I don't know what that says about me.
Well, I mean, they had a good run there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marvel could take lessons from some of the Disney animation villains over the course of the 90s.
Yeah.
So, we got some sneak peek footage from the Captain America Blu-ray about Doctor Strange or for Doctor Strange. This is your courtesy reminder from the Movies on the Brain podcast that there is a second Marvel movie coming out this year, and it's named Doctor Strange. It looks a lot like Inception.
I mean, I get it, but I get the Inception thing, but it's like, it's not Inception, but I get it. Again, this is just to get us excited for the movie. It doesn't really tell us anything. It gives you more information about Baron Mordo. And if you know anything about Baron Mordo, you kind of get the feeling that
this is like his setup. Yeah, the turn is coming. The turn is coming. Whether it comes in this movie or whether it comes further down the line.
Yeah, the way this is going, I hope it doesn't come in this movie. Because by all points, if it comes in this movie, it's coming at the very end. And I would hate for them to do that. Just so...
Knowing that Infinity War is coming and we're not going to reference it?
Well, not... Marvel has a track record of, like, you know, permanently incapacitating their villains. And it would be a shame for Baron Mordo, who's getting all this build up, to be one of those incapacitated people.
But he could be Loki.
He could be. I think he should be. He's Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's like, you can't waste that dude on...
You can't waste any of those people.
No, no. Like, everybody needs... I mean, Mads is pretty much going to have to die.
Right.
Or he can be sucked into another dimension where Dormammu will come back later. But chances are, it's a Marvel movie, he's going to die. That's a shame all on his own. Especially when I think he could have been Doctor Doom and such a great Doctor Doom. But that's not here or there. You do whatever you do with Mads, and then if you want to turn Chiwetel at the very end and give that little hint and nod and like, you like this movie, you see he's bad, come back for the next one, fine. But just don't turn him like in the last 10 minutes and Strange has a dispatch of him relatively quickly.
Right. So Chad, once upon a time, the fourth season, it had a season basically called The Black Swan, and it had to do with Emma Swan turning to the dark side, essentially, and having to be reclaimed by the light. And part of that, the first half of that season, the way that Once Upon a Time does, is they split their base seasons basically in half, where half is set with one storyline, and they wrap all those storylines up in the fall finale. Yeah. And they do a whole new set of storylines and story ideas for the spring season. Well, their fall of last year, their fall of the fifth season, story setup was Camelot. And there's this gentleman who played King Arthur in the Once Upon a Time version of Camelot who has decided to join the cast of Transformers The Last Knight. So, Chad, what they're telling us is that The Last Knight has some references to the Athenian legend, and the fact that that sword might have actually been Excalibur. You remember the sword that he pulled out of the ship?
The random sword?
That random sword that he pulled out in 2014.
My brain hurts.
Because Kate Yeager is in this movie.
Oh, my brain hurts. So, I completely forgot this was on the rundown. And when you start talking about Once Upon a Time, I just wish the Disney stuff, because I can't see the rundown over here, because I'm old and my eyes don't work too well. When you said Camelot, I'm like, oh God, we have to talk about this. So, I don't even know who this guy is.
No one does.
All I heard was King Arthur joins Transformers, and I'm like, that's it? I'm not clicking this link. I'm not touching this link. Any video that's talking about it, I haven't seen yet. I know nothing because this is stupid. Like, so freaking stupid. Stupid, like, what? I'm not gonna start with the sword, completely and totally random sword that Optimus picked up in a spaceship from a Cybertronian spaceship from whatever that dude's name was that wasn't on Earth, that was somewhere in the galaxy that came down to kill people. I forget the plot.
Hemlock, I think.
It's not Hemlock. It's like, I don't know, Shockwave or something stupid with the cannon face. Him. He wasn't even on Earth. He came to Earth to hunt down the rest of us. Yeah, he came down to hunt them down. So it seems like he hadn't been to Earth. He just came down to hunt people down. So the random sword in his ship that hasn't been to Earth is supposed to be Excalibur. Now I'm going to ignore the whole Optimus could pick up the sword. So how the hell can King Arthur pick up the sword? Because Optimus is a big freaking truck. And that means the sword has to be the size of a building. So how did he pull it out of the stone when he's like big as the hilt? I'm not going to go on that. I'm going to say they're going to transform with magic, much like the Allspark in the first one was this big, huge cube that took up the whole Hoover Dam. And then Bumblebee touches it and turns to a little box that Shia LaBeouf can walk around with. Well, Cybertronian magic. Fine. Why? Why does King Arthur need to be in this movie?
Because somebody in that writer's room had this brilliant idea of how to tie the Athenian legend.
Who is that person? They need to be pulled out. Say, this is not your calling. Clearly you misread what your calling is supposed to be, because this is stupid.
Refund us our $2 million.
No. You lucked up and made it this far. We've made your life. Take your paycheck. Go home. Don't pick up a pen. Don't open a keyboard to Word. Nothing. Just go sit home. Think about what you've done. Because it's dumb. And the biggest problem is, it's so dumb. But you let the dumbness out to the world that Michael Bay could hear it. And he was like, that's awesome, man. Let's do it. So, no, you need to go home, because now I got to go in there and deal with this. Because he's not going to let it go. And he makes all the money, and I can't do nothing with him. But you? You can go. It's so stupid.
Chad, how does Q-Bub double for Camelot?
It doesn't. Camelot is in England. Cuba is Cuba. Camelot is in the Northern Hemisphere. Well, Cuba's in the Northern Hemisphere too, but it's closer to the equator. Cuba is like, when I think of what Cuba is, it's the exact opposite of what I think of in Camelot. I think of cold and like castles and like frost breath and like stuff in your beard because it's so cold and all that stuff. Cuba, I think of Cuban cigars and mojitos and like straw hats and sun. None of the stuff I think of in Camelot. But this is Michael Bay, so we're going to put Michael Bay magic on it. We're just going to blow something up, say it's Camelot. It's an explosion.
So how does this work, Chad? Because Cade Yeager is running around on Earth in 2017.
If it were me, and I was giving this god-awful idea, King Arthur is only in flashbacks to explain stuff. We can have several flashbacks if this guy's big enough and King Arthur has to have a big enough fart. Now, we've already established that this is a dumb idea, and then Michael Bay has heard it and thinks it's awesome. So, that to me says that through this, like, Optimus goes off into space with this big sword, he goes to find some stuff, and he comes right back down, and when he gets on Earth, there's a door in the hill, and out pops King Arthur, and he's like, I'm here to save the day, dude. And at that point, if somebody has paid me to go see this, because we've moved past the point of somebody just getting me in the movie, you're going to have to pay me now. Where I'm going to make this really difficult for y'all to get me to go see this. Just putting it out there. So, at that point, if I were to see this movie, I'd be like, F it. I'm out. And just put my hands up, throw my popcorn, and just walk out. So even if you paid me, and this happens, I'm still walking out. So don't waste your money. I'm not going.
Okay, now there is a reasonable explanation here. There's a reasonable story point that could be made.
Are you about to, with a straight face, tell me reasonable with King Arthur, Transformers, and Michael Bay? Are you really going to put those in the same sentence?
Yes, because the way that I can do it is to say that it is not the proper Arthur from the Athenian legend time. That it is the great, 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 great 17 times lone survivor of the line of Arthur who does not understand or know that he is related to the great Athenian king.
So is this dude going to have to pull the sword out?
I would assume so.
You do realize it still doesn't make this not stupid, right?
No, no. The fact that they would do a Sword in the Stone story set in the 21st century is enchanted level silly, but it's the only way that you conceivably do this without making this a period piece. And just literally taking Cade Yeager back to 15th century England.
So, you really think Michael Bay, who hasn't done a period piece, who's been planning to put King Arthur in this movie since he started, didn't go in and see the trailer for Guy Ritchie's King Arthur and be like, son of a... This is what I wanted to do, and he's gonna be... No. No. I don't care if it wasn't a period piece. We put an old Arthur in this. I gotta blow up some castles and stuff. Now, I gotta show them that you can't out Michael Bay me and Michael Bay and King Arthur. I gotta do this. There's no way that we don't have King Arthur in an old stormy castle and something doesn't blow up Michael Bay style in this movie. There's just no possible way.
So we've gone from Rom Space Knight to King Arthur.
One of those is a good idea. King Arthur ain't it.
So you do understand that after they do this and make $1 billion, they then proceed on to the Bumblebee standalone movie.
I am not putting it past it for this movie to make $1 billion. But what I need to happen is that we as the continental United States only give this movie $150 million. Then that will restore some of my faith in my fellow countrymen. The rest of the world, y'all like shoot, shoot, bang, bang, blow, blow. That's fine. That's fine.
Bad Boys 3 coming 2019.
You know, everything has its place. It's fine. If people want to see it, it's fine. It keeps diminishing here, and I want it to diminish past 200 million. That would make me smile. If it still makes $1 billion, it's fine. I would question a lot of y'all reasoning, but it's fine. At some point, this movie's got to stop. I mean, this cannot be the only franchise that is truly, truly critic proof, where it can just make $1 billion, even though over 80%, 90% of the people that see it absolutely hate it. There's no way you can keep making $1 billion off of 10% of people. No way.
10% of people who like American flags, Budweiser, and things blowing up.
You know when you say it that way.
And girls in bikinis.
But it keeps going down here. So even those people are like, I don't know, bro. Like, I saw it because, you know, fuck America. But that's even a little bit too American for me.
Okay, Chicago can only be blown up so many times.
No, they can blow it up a few more times. But they're not blowing up Chicago now. They're blowing up Cuba.
They're gonna blow up Camelot.
He's gonna blow up Camelot. This is gonna be so.
So does that mean our Guinevere has already been cast and we just didn't realize it when the cast list was announced? That young Disney Channel actress is she Guinevere?
I forgot you. You have to remember. I don't remember anything about this movie. I consciously try to block it out because it's like nothing good can come from this. But would I be surprised? No. I wonder how he's going to get her to show up in, like, next to nothing so he can get a shot of, like, her legs and her abs and all of the whole author lore where she's supposed to be wearing this big, big frilly dress with a corset. Oh, he'll just shoot other things. That's how he works that around.
Yeah, he shoots the things that are inside of the corset.
Yeah. This is next year, right?
Yeah, this is summer 2017. Production's already wrapped.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yes. So, Transformers, The Last Knight, the Athenian legend, with cars, guns, and American flags.
This is so stupid. It just is.
It is not nearly as silly as a Robin Hood shared universe. with individual movies about the individual Merry Men.
No, that's dumb, but I don't know if this is... This might be... Well, no, no, because they really were trying to make, like, a nondescript Merry Man number 3. You get your own movie. Okay, I'll give you that.
Which will be directed now. Come back.
He needs to go do something else.
We
man.
Need more things like Pain and Gain.
I like Pain.
Yeah, we need more things like Pain and Gain, more things like Bad Boys, more things like Coyote Ugly, Con Air.
Wait, he did Coyote Ugly?
Maybe he didn't direct Coyote Ugly. Maybe Bruckheimer produced it, maybe, is what I'm thinking.
I'm curious, I don't know. But, yeah, he can do those other things. Like, sometimes they're still, like, ridiculous, but it's not this. It's just dumb.
Yeah, I mean, his Bad Boys movies are good.
I mean... The first one is good. The second one is good to a point. Because then there's a point where...
In the third act where it all just...
Yeah, it's just Michael Bay. Again, involving Cuba. Because that is completely... 6 cops are going to take on the Cuban army and win. Yeah, no.
Well, I mean, it is Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. So...
Half of that equation makes it even harder to believe.
Well, there was this thing called Blue Streak.
Yeah, no.
So, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Keeping of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mesh Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant weekend.